More than 1,000 squatters and sympathizers joined a national protest in Utrecht, Holland against new legislation to outlaw squatting.
It was always said that the ownership wasn't as important as the right to use something. You have the right to use the building because the owner doesn't use it. The right of the users is gonna stand higher than the right of the owner if the owner is too stupid to do something with the place. But now the mentality is changing and it's really like, don't touch your property, you know, keep your hands off our property, and who are you to take away somebody else's property, even though you don't really take away the property because it's still from the owner, but you're just using the place. People are starting to realize a bit more, you know, that it's not only about emptiness or housing shortage, but that it's also about like taking autonomy over your own life and wanting to live different ways instead of the way that which is prescribed by capitalist society. And I think this can be quite interesting, and I see happening that people are starting to realize again, like, hey, wait, there's something here that once we fought for it, and now it's time again to fight for our spaces and fight for this special way of living.
For the last 3 years, a ban on squatting has been pending in the Netherlands. A new act that is to ban Dutch squatting passed through their parliament on October 15, 2009. Despite strong critique from the High Court, the Union of City Councils, and even the Amsterdam Police Force, a Christian and right-wing majority in The Hague is pushing this law through. Having suffered from an immense housing shortage ever since the 60s, squatting has a long history in the Netherlands and has always been a legal means for thousands of people to acquire a roof over their heads. Tonight on Circle A Radio, we speak with Sanne, a squatter in Amsterdam, about the current and historical conditions for squatting, the role critical awareness and neighborhood involvement plays in the lives of squatters, and how the upcoming ban will change their world. Stay tuned. We interviewed Sanne Sunday, December 20th. This is what she'd spent her day doing.
There were 4 squatting actions in Amsterdam today. We always have on Sunday, it's squat day. We have the organized squat actions where we, well, squat apartments or houses or whatever. I guess it was a bit too much to do 4 today because of the snow and everything. So the last one didn't happen, but the other ones were quite successful. Anyway, I think in Holland the whole routine around squatting is quite interesting because it's quite well organized, and in some ways you could even say, well, not institutionalized, but there's a lot of tradition and specifics around squatting, and Amsterdam is kind of the squat city where most of the squattings are, and because Sunday is a good day because people don't have to work most of the time or don't have to go to school, then also you have a bit of time before the owner can respond because most of the companies or owners are not working as well on Sunday. So that's the idea behind the Sunday squat day.
Before we continue with our interview with Sanne, we'd like to play a report that aired on Radio Netherlands Worldwide November 8th, 2009.
All the rooms on this corridor are now studios. We've got a bicycle workshop that's also up and running. We've got a library with left-wing literature opening tomorrow. We've got a room where we get together and cook for people, a bistro. And downstairs, we're getting a skating area next week. We've still got to make room for that, but next week we'll get that going.
Social idealism appears to be as alive today at this new squat in the Dutch town of Zwolle as it was in the 1970s when the Squatting Act came into force, making it legal in the Netherlands to occupy any property left empty for more than 12 months for no clear purpose. Back in the 1970s, this new law, still in force now, came in response to a major housing shortage combined with the fact that many properties were left standing empty. Now, however, there's a majority in Parliament that wants squatting banned. In fact, some critics in Dutch political circles say squatting causes property in neighbourhoods to become run down, and have even described the squatting movement as criminal. But Marit argues this negative image of squatters isn't justified at all.
Het pand was zodanig groot dat wij vonden dat wij hier aan dit pand een sociaal nut konden bieden.
This place is so big, we thought we could use it to benefit society. And the thing we got going first is the giveaway shop. A place where you can bring things and find stuff, all for free. Everyone in this society is buying stuff and throwing things away, and buying more and throwing more out, which also happens to be really bad for the environment. So items you don't use, but could perhaps still be used by others, can be brought here so other people can come and pick them up.
The proposed ban on squatting is set to come into force next year, but it'll be up to local councils to enforce it or not, as the case may be. The country's four largest cities have already made it known that they think the ban is a waste of time, so it's doubtful whether much will actually change after January 1st, 2010.
Zwolle has followed the four big cities, Rotterdam, Amsterdam, The Hague, and Utrecht. And they're all opposed to the ban on squatting. The Amsterdam police say, for example, that it's impossible to forcibly evict squatters from the same places time and time again. So I don't see how that would work if the ban comes into effect.
This former school building in Zwolle is one of many empty properties that have been squatted in recent weeks. And that's no coincidence, according to Marit.
In protest, as a statement that, while they may say that squatting is no longer needed, clearly it is possible and still necessary, because there is still so much property left empty and dilapidated, so much left empty purely to fatten up real estate portfolios. That's the statement made here, that this can't be the end of squatting. Squatting will definitely continue, even after January 1st.
I'm Sanne, and I live now for 5 years in a squatted house in Amsterdam. I've always been quite interested in squatting, also because my parents used to squat and used to tell me great stories about it. And then in my hometown, there were some squats where you had like punk shows and whatnot. So I always found it a quite interesting phenomena. Then when I moved to Amsterdam, pretty soon I was asked to move into a squat. And since then, I've been living there. The house that I live in has been squatted for 8 years now. Quite a success story because most of the squats don't last that long. But our squat was pretty specific because it was 30 years empty before it got squatted. And it was a complete ruin, so we had to rebuild everything ourselves, from floors till toilet, till water, till electricity, etc. So it's a quite nice place in the end. Quite a successful story. Most squats don't last that long. Most squats are a couple of months.
Is your squat in the center of town, or where is it?
Yeah, it's right in the center. It's actually in the bar, tourist, restaurant district, which is quite funny. It's quite peculiar because the houses around us are super expensive. People pay like thousands of euros a month for rent. Well, in the middle of all this, we are the squat, the only squat in the blocks. There are some other squats in the center, but it's getting a bit harder to squat in the center because, of course, there's not so much houses empty there.
Can you give us a basic introduction of the squatting laws in the Netherlands as they have existed up until recently?
It's quite interesting. Like, of course, squatting here as in many other countries, has a long history. But the special thing, I think, about Holland is that when squatting started as a political movement, of course, like, it's not prohibited squatting, but it's also not that, like, it says by law that you can squat or anything. It's just something lacking in the law which gives you a house piece as soon as you move in. Technically, it works like this. If you squat, you, of course, break open the door and get entrance to the empty building. Then as soon as you put a table and a bed and a chair there, you have something which is called house peace, but it means that you have protection and that people cannot just breach this house peace. You are protected by the law and people can't just enter in your house and kick you out. They just have to go through a court case, even if they're the owner. You are protected by the law with this house peace, which everybody has. Also, renters have it. But the interesting thing, of course, is that you have to have this table, bed and chair in, and then you have this house peace. This started end 60s, beginning 70s, it started as an organized movement. Before this, there were, of course, people squatting, but it was more like silent squats. The word kraken, which is squatting in Dutch, was also not used that much. There was a huge housing shortage. Well, at the same time, there were a lot of houses empty, and people, well, did this silent squatting for a while already. But until the end 60s, it was not an organized movement, and this kind of changed like around like in 69 they had the first organized squatting action, which was responded to by the police with eviction. And in the beginning it was quite hard to squat like organized, but then this changed a bit in the beginning 70s. Like in 1975 you had this first organized squatting movement emerging, when a whole neighborhood where a lot of people lived, you all squatted silently, was under the threat of eviction. And then people started to organize, like the different separate groups that were busy with the squatting started to organize together. And from then on, there started to emerge a political movement with organizational structures. Of course, the authorities also responded to this, so they changed the law a little bit. They made several changes. They're not that interesting to talk about now, but the most interesting one is probably a law in 1989, which stated that you can't squat a building empty for less than a year. So if you would squat it and it wouldn't have been empty for longer than a year, then you can get evicted, or at least you can get punished by law, which meant that the practice of squatting was also changing. And this is also something that's quite intriguing for a lot of people that come from abroad. How it works now is that as soon as we squatted something and took the table, bed, chair in and stuff like that, we actually call the police to come and check the building if it was really empty. They saw it, that it was empty, and we can prove it was empty, and we can show to them, you know, it was empty for a year or longer. Of course, this is pretty strange, because in a way you're doing something. It's kind of a civil disobedience, but still you're calling the cops to check up on you, and then you have this really strange situation where the cops come and we say like, okay, we have somebody talking to the cops, and we won't allow more than two cops inside, and sometimes they give us some trouble for that. But then they go inside, check the whole building, and then they're most of the time they're like, yeah, good luck, and we'll get in touch with the owner, and then he can do his story, and then the juridical system starts to kind of work, and then they have to figure it out. Most of the time it works like this. It also depends a bit on the city where you're in. In Amsterdam, the cops are quite used to squatting. In some little villages, they don't really understand what's going on or what you're doing, and they can give you a bit of more trouble. But most of the time, yeah, this is kind of the way it works. And most of the time, the cops don't really, they don't really care. And then you have this house piece, and then the owner, if he wants to get rid of you, he has to start a court case. And in this court case, he kind of has to prove that he has plans with the building, that he wants to evict you to let it stand empty again, but that, for example, he has a renter that wants to rent it, or he wants to renovate it, or whatever. This is the theory. Of course, if you look at the court cases, it's quite easy for the owner to come up with a story, and the judge most of the time believes the owner and not the squatters, of course. But still, this gives us this space in the juridical system to squat and to build up something in squats, because most of the time you can keep it for a while, and sometimes even 8 years, like in our situation when the owner doesn't take any steps to evict you. This was like until now, and they wanted... Of course, authorities are not that happy with squatting, and they wanted to prohibit it already. They first started to talk about this law in 1979 even, but because there's a lot of support in the mainstream or general public, people really understand why people squat, because there's a housing shortage, because the housing market in Holland is really crazy. There's lack of space. There's a lot of people looking for houses. And at the same time, it's profitable for owners to keep their houses stand empty, to speculate with them. Or, for example, too many offices are built, which are never going to be rented out. And still, there's all these people looking for houses. And this is a story that in the 70s and 80s, people were really able to to make good campaigns and to really raise the awareness with the general public that squatting in that case is a solution and not a problem, but a very good solution to such a problem of the housing shortage, and also that it's very legitimate to do so. Still, this support is quite big, so all these times that it was, they tried to prohibit it, but even, for example, the churches, the first time they tried to prohibit it in 1979, it were actually the churches that were really saying, like, no, this is a bad idea, and then the Christian party that was in the government then listened to the advice of the churches and decided not to vote in favor of the prohibition. So all this makes it a quite interesting phenomena in Holland, because it's always been partly accepted by society. Even now, of course, like one of the reasons for this interview is the upcoming squat prohibition. And the interesting thing I find is that the cops are against this squat prohibition because they say it's going to give them too much work. They're not looking forward to evict all these people because, yeah, there's thousands of people living in squats, and they are like, yeah, we don't really see a problem and don't really have the money for it, and it's only going to lead to more conflict. This has to do with the general Dutch strange tradition where the government always wants to buy off the conflict, which has positives and negative sides. Also, all the big cities, the mayors of the big cities, they also stated already that they're very against this law, that they don't see the problem, that they don't have money or time to evict all these places, and that they're threatening now that if this law would actually be implemented or be accepted, that they won't implement it. Of course, in reality, they have to, because here in Holland, when the state government decides something, then the municipality has to do it. But it's very interesting who our supporters are these days. Even one of the most conservative advisory committee that always gives advices about laws, they are also really against this. At the same time, the parliament voted in favor of the law, even though we have this all these friends, well, I don't know, but all these people against the squat law, mayors and the cops, and this very conservative advisory juridical board, still they want to push it through. It became a very ideological thing. A couple of years ago, it was always like you have the law of ownership, and it was always said that the ownership wasn't as important as the right to use something. You have the right to use the building, because the owner doesn't use it. The right of the users is going to stand higher than the right of the owner if the owner is too stupid to do something with the place. But now the mentality is changing, and it's really like, don't touch your property, you know, keep your hands off our property, and who are you to take away somebody else's property, even though you don't really take away the property because it's still from the owner, but you're just using the place. There's kind of a mentality shift overall. It's getting a bit more conservative and right-wing. So the squatting law is just one example of that mentality shift, I think.
You are listening to an interview with Sanne, a squatter in Amsterdam, on Circle A Radio.
From a situation where squatting was kind of legal, they now want to go to a situation where it is a criminal offense, which is also interesting because I think, except Germany, most of the countries, they don't have a special law to prohibit squatting. They just have other laws that make squatting impossible. But now they want to have a special law that makes squatting a criminal offense. Not only the act of squatting, actually being in a squat or being in a place that has a squatted situation. So it would also count for the squats that are already existing. The people inside would become illegal as soon as this law would be implemented. In Holland, the law first has to pass through parliament, through something that's called the second chamber, and then it has to pass through the first chamber. I would say like the system is a bit different than in the United States, but this first chamber, they have to watch more that the law is juridically sound and that it doesn't cause too much trouble to implement it. And the parliament, the second chamber, is more they can practically introduce laws. So this parliament, they voted in favor for it. This was accepted, and now it's at this first chamber where now they already talked about it. Most of the parties were extremely negative about the law. They have sent like 17 pages of questions and of problems, and the general tendency is saying like it's going to be a huge criminal offense. The maximum punishment is going to be 2 years. If you do it with a group, it's going to be 4 years. If you're going to use violence, it's going to be 6 years of maximum punishment. And they all find it a bit too much and don't really see the problem with squatting. But we kind of have to wait. They now filed in this 70 pages long questions and remarks, and then they're waiting for an answer again from the parliament. And then they're going to vote. And if they vote in favor, then this law will be implemented somewhere next year, beginning next year probably. Places like our place, which is still officially squatted, like we don't have any contract with the owner or whatever. And also, as soon as you're in a place like this, you are illegal officially. That's quite problematic. Of course, we have to see how it's going to be implemented. We are having a lot of meetings and discussions and whatnot about this now, like especially since the big cities and the mayors of the big cities also already are saying now that they don't want to really implement it. We really have to see how harsh they're going to live up to this law, if they're going to only react on newly squat buildings or if they're going to start evicting other squats as well. I think knowing Dutch politics, they will choose for some kind of watered-down solution where they will push people to sign contracts, for example, or try to respond a bit harsher on new squats, but give older squats a bit more time. They honestly don't really have the capacity anyway to evict all these places right away. And they understand that it would create huge tensions. So they are always trying to choose for de-escalation, to try to negotiate with people to make them, for example, sign contracts with the owner. So this is the kind of thing that we're going to see in practice from the authorities.
We talked a little bit about the surprising people that are on your side, but do you want to talk about the people that we would expect to be in opposition and the protests that have occurred?
Yeah, for sure. Of course, that's much more interesting. This is the third time within a couple of years that they're talking about the squat prohibition. So there's been campaigns for the last couple of years continuously from squatters, but also a lot of support comes from people using the infrastructure that has been made possible by the squatting movement, because there's a lot of legalized places, for example, that are now very famous cultural temples or stages or places where bands perform. You have all these legalized housing complexes that used to be squatted and that were made possible with a continuous effort and struggle of the squatting movement, because the squatting movement created a lot of space for alternative living and alternative projects. And there's a lot of support from different groups that are using this infrastructure, cultural groups like musicians and artists, but also groups, for example, that have refugee support, which is also something that the squatting movement is quite strong at. And then you have, of course, the people that live squatted themselves. They are doing several actions, campaigns, demonstrations, visiting the, we have a Christian party ruling at this moment, and one of the persons initiating this law is quite a hardcore Christian, and they visited him at his church service, came there with a lot of people saying like, yeah, in the future when we won't have a house anymore, we're just going to hang out in the church every Sunday, how do you like that, you know, and make ourselves more visible. Even though the squatting movement has a lot of support, it's also been much more marginalized than it used to be. And a lot of people, it lost a lot of support, and it got more removed from mainstream society. So you have this idea of filthy, workless come that just wants to live for free. It is an interesting thing, and a lot of academics have been looking at this. This because the squatting movement was huge in the end 70s, 80s. I mean, that's by itself already, I think, quite special that there's a country where, like in Amsterdam, there were thousands and thousands of houses squatted. There was a neighborhood that, like, the mayor couldn't even come because it was just from the squatters and by the squatters. There was so much vacancy of buildings. There were so much empty buildings, and there was such a huge housing shortage that this happened. And then people often point to the fact that the squat movement got more violent, that there were more violent protests, and that this way they lost support from the general public. Also, people point to the fact that there's just less empty buildings in the city. The city has been upgraded a lot, of course, since the 80s. It's not that obvious that there are streets and streets and streets that are empty and still people looking for houses. There's still a lot of people looking for houses, but there's not that many empty buildings. Still, there's enough empty buildings to squat and to legitimize squatting, I would say, and also there's this housing shortage. So that's still quite a strong argument. So there's also a lot of effort put into adapting that image to the more realistic situation of people finding a solution for housing shortage and trying to show what is happening inside squats and why it is this is a special thing and why this is important that it won't go away and how this is impossible without a squatting movement because the Dutch society is so much regulated that it's really hard to develop certain initiatives in an institutionalized way or on an official way because there's so much regulation, it would cost so much money that this is quite impossible. And of course, there's a very strong anti-capitalist and anarchist tendency as well where people have a lot of free shops and kitchens and all these initiatives are possible because it's in squats, because you don't have to pay rent, because you don't have to do everything according to the official regulations, because you don't have to pay profit taxes and whatnot. So people are really trying to raise this awareness. There has been also quite a big campaign from authorities and from the media for the last couple of years already to completely criminalize squatters, which has been quite successful from their part. That's why it's even more surprising that now the police saying that they're not in favor of it, while in favor for this squatting prohibition, while a year ago continuously they were shouting in the newspapers how all these evictions and how terrible it was and how violent the squatters were. And now they're saying, like, yeah, actually, we don't really see the problem. It's intriguing to see now that people, because squatting, of course, like, there's great things happening in the squat movement in Holland, but sometimes I'm even, like, hesitant to call it even still a movement because it's been so, people are so used to it that it's possible and it's kind of easy and people didn't have to fight for it anymore. So it also with that, like, kind of the realization gets lost why you actually do it and why it's actually special and what it has to do with more broader structures in society we fight against. You've been really seeing that a lot of political awareness with the squatters themselves, a lot of radical critique of society has gotten kind of a bit lost because it was such a, well, easy practice. I think it's interesting now that people are starting to organize a bit more again together, that people are starting to realize a bit more, you know, that it's not only about emptiness or housing shortage, but that it's also about, like, taking autonomy over your own life and wanting to live different ways instead of the way that which is prescribed by capitalist society. And I think this can be quite interesting, and I see happening that people are starting to realize again, like, hey, wait, there's something here that once we fought for it and now it's time again to fight for our spaces and fight for this special way of living. It's really interesting because it's a really broad, diverse group of people that's squatting, and you have radical anarchists, and but then you have really, like, kind of conservative students, and then you have families. Sometimes it's hard to be on one line. I think it's the strength of the squatting movement, but it makes it also harder to have a shared message in a campaign, for example, and to make sure that you're not being divided, which the authorities, of course, continuously try to do. But I see that people are uniting again and are slowly getting a bit better organized and more things are happening. Our strength is still direct action, and the struggle should be more on the streets. And I think people are starting to realize this more and more, and that this might be the place that we might be able to create this kind of space that we're going to need to continue squatting, because, of course, everybody is shouting now, we're going to continue squatting, no matter if it's legal or not, because their law system is, of course, not ours. At the same time, it's not that easy if you want to keep on having a living, and if you get evicted continuously, yeah, then on a certain moment you get tired from it and you're kind of forced to maybe do something else. People have, you know, they have jobs, they have studies that they have to do. So you have to try to create, I think, with direct action, some space, especially I think in the Dutch system this is really possible because they're always looking for de-escalation. So if you get a bit more out there and if you start to fight a bit more and do more direct actions, then the government might respond like, okay, we try to arrange it a bit differently to give you a bit more space. We have to, of course, completely reconstruct our practice of squatting. Of course, we can't call the police as soon as it's illegal. It would be a bit silly. You know, it would be like, hey, I just stole this purse. Can you check up on it? So at the same time, we're used to have this kind of luxury where you organize a squatting action, you mobilize a lot of people for it, then people help you squat it, and then you wait a bit for the police, and then, you know, you don't have to worry so much anymore about which time they're going to come to evict you. From that moment on, you're relatively stable, and that's going to be a very different thing and a huge change of mindset for people to squat on a different way.
You're listening to Circle A Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO, in Portland, Corvallis, and Hood River. Tonight we're exploring the new ban on squatting in the Netherlands. We're speaking with Sanna, a squatter in Amsterdam, about the current and historical conditions for squatting, the role critical awareness and neighborhood involvement plays in the lives of squatters, and how the ban will change their world. Sanna now tells us about the historical role of squatting in the radical political scene in Amsterdam.
Squatting in Holland was always, as in many other countries, but it has been just a part of this wave of radical activism in the 80s and in the 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s. This wave already started kind of to go down in the mid-80s, and then in the 90s it was quite like in the general society people it has been going less or worse for social movements in West Europe and in Holland especially. So you have this combination of all these factors. Also the fact that which sounds maybe a bit silly, but in the 70s, a lot of people, they lived off the dole. It was very easy to do that, and it got more and more harder, so people had to work. And now people are more forced to join the rat race, so they don't have that much time and energy to spend for something like squatting or other social movements. As with general activism and social movements, or at least what you've seen here in Western Europe, is the often heard development towards more like a lifestyle movement, a marginalized movement which focuses much more on an alternative lifestyle, which might be less in contact with mainstream society. And I think the same happened with squatting in Holland, even though there are still students and regulars squatting, but not as much as before. And I think also the country is just a bit more wealthy, so people are choosing more for a regular life in a rented apartment and all the comfort and so on in regular society because they can afford to. And I think in the 60s, 70s, 80s, people weren't, especially in the 80s, you had the huge crisis, of course, and this was also an important reason. People didn't have so much to lose, so they went squatting. So you have all these different developments in general society and within the squat movement that are, in the end, resulting to the movement becoming smaller and smaller and more marginalized. You have squat groups supporting illegal immigrants, of course, this is quite important. But then you also have a lot of people from different countries squatting here. There was even a squatted mosque for a while, which was also quite interesting. I mean, there is some... this has been actually an argument for the right wing, which is getting more and more xenophobic, as we sadly know. In the whole of Europe, and I think not only Europe. So this argument of like, yeah, you know, all these foreigners squatting here, living for free, it has been also an important argument for like right-wing groups and tendencies to point to the squatting movement as being problematic. This is the thing that I'm quite positive about with this law, that people are realizing again how special it is to have these spaces and trying to make a bit more out of it. I think we also have to keep working on like some political awareness of tendencies in society and some critical awareness about society within our circles, because some people within the squatting scene or movement or within the at least the support that see themselves as supporters of squatters, we're going along with this argument like, yeah, but all these foreigners, they're creating all these problems for squatters, you know. You have the good Dutch squatters and the bad foreign squatters. And these are all tendencies that I think are now a bit more clear to people, and they're more like, oh, they're trying to divide us, so to rule us the classic way. And people are starting to get more together and to unite a bit more and to initiate all kind of things together. And also, you have to tell your story much more to the public. If you're in a situation where it's possible what you do and you don't need to really legitimize yourself time and time again, but now this starts to be necessary again, which is good, because it means that people are also starting to think about things that they can do to get the broader public aware and in contact and open up to more people instead of only, you know, the usual suspects of the squat scene.
Again, you are listening to an interview with Amsterdam squatter Sana here on Circle A Radio.
Can you describe some of the spaces in Amsterdam and maybe touch on squats that do different things, like where people live or where people serve food or services provided for refugees in certain squats, things like that?
Well, basically any building that's empty for longer than a year can be squatted. So you see a huge diversity of buildings that are squatted. The most places that are squatted are just regular apartments where maybe one or two people would live. Sometimes you have a whole block of apartments because it's going to be demolished and it's, you know, a whole block is empty, and then you have quite more people living there. And then also the chances that, for example, certain facilities are missing is a bit bigger, so people always have to build that themselves. Then you have more places that, for example, industrial places or, how do you say, abandoned office spaces, for example, that are squatted, that are, of course, give a complete different opportunity to do things with space. In these spaces, often people are not only living there, but also they're making workshop spaces, for example, bike workshops or practice spaces, or often there's like concert spaces inside of them. There's now a place where you have concert space, computer, Linux freaks workshop for photography, a workshop for silkscreen printing. So all these activities are having place there, which is really nice. It's more the places that which we would call social centers, where a lot of social and cultural activities take place on a very anti-capitalistic basis. and also sometimes like Dutch lessons for immigrants. It's all voluntarily done and nobody gets paid for any of this, but it's just something that we like to generate as a movement. Then you have also places that are a bit more outside of the city, like old farms, for example, that are squatted. Often people have like, they start projects there as like vegetable gardens or also workplaces for a bit bigger projects. You also have places where people have wagons to live in with like huge terrains next to them. So people will have wagons where they live and maybe one building where the kitchen is and stuff like that. And the different thing, I think, in Holland, in comparison, for example, Spain, where I've been a lot, where you have a lot of squats, like in Spain, nobody's almost never lives there. It's just a social center. It's just a place where activities take place, but there's nobody living there. And in Holland, there's always a combination of people living there. And if people choose to, they do all kind of activities. In our squats, we don't really have a bar or anything like this, but we do have a silkscreen workshop where people can work if they want to. And like my housemate has a tattoo studio here. She built her own tattoo studio. We have also, like many squats have, what we call like a refugee room, a room where illegal immigrants can live, where we can house them for a while because they have no place to live on a regular basis. You have many, many different places. A month ago, there was this luxury villa squatted, and it was completely berserk because it was from an old criminal mob guy, and the police, when they entered, they saw this portrait hanging of this guy, and they were like, hey, wait, you know, if you see this guy coming, turning up at this house, call us because we want him. We are already looking for him for 2 years. And then there was this secret rooms and this, and all this leopard print, you know, this really cliche movie thing with like a leopard print carpet and really ugly pink curtains and like a heart-shaped bed, that kind of stuff. But yeah, it was empty for years already because apparently this guy is on the run. He doesn't use his millionaire's villa. But you might wonder if you want to hang out there because this was quiet outside of the city. And then friends of mine squatted 30,000 square meters. I don't really know what this is in your system, but it's quite huge, huge, huge office space, which was built 7 years ago. You know, this typical glass 8-9-story building with glass everywhere. And it was built 7 years ago and never been rented out. So there was basically nothing in there, and it was brand new, but it hadn't been in use since it was built. And then you have a ruin like ours, which was, like I said, empty for 30 years, and on all floors was pigeon poop and no facilities, and we had to build our own rooms and everything. We had to build everything from scratch after we cleaned out the tons and tons of pigeon poop. So, yeah, there's a very wide variety of squats and of buildings and of what people make of it.
I'm interested in how you've been able to get people in neighborhoods involved in supporting the squats.
Yeah, this is also a long tradition that I haven't talked about yet. What people say is a neighborhood struggle. It's a very important aspect of squatting because we have been talking a lot about how squatting is a means of housing and how it's a means of creating alternative or autonomous spaces. But squatting is as well, it's a means of action, especially. It's a means of action to say you don't agree, for example, with the policy about the neighborhood. For example, this first organized squatting, when the squatting movement first emerged as a politically organized movement, then it was all about a huge area in the center of Amsterdam, a very beautiful historical area that now attracts a lot of tourists. That was the government wanted to demolish it and make it an office district. People were really against this plan. The people that were living there, rented or owned a house there, they were not very happy with these plans. And then slowly but surely, a lot of people moved out. So there were a lot of buildings were empty. And then the squatters came not only to squat for housing, but also to kind of occupy this building so the plans couldn't see through. And this was a very successful struggle back then. The neighborhood is still there. It hasn't been demolished. It's now a big tourist attraction, actually, because it's so beautiful, historical neighborhood. So since then, this tradition has always been there to cooperate with the neighbors in their struggles, for example, against the demolishing of houses or against certain plans of luxury apartments instead of social rent or of a parking garage that people don't really like to have, but often people don't really realize what their capacity is to actually stop a project or to start to do actions. And because in the squatting movement there's a lot of experience with this, squatters always try to help the neighbors in their struggle with these kind of things and or occupy a building as part of this struggle. And often it's also or sometimes it happens that the people in a neighborhood themselves, they start to squat something as an action, and they start to organize around something and occupy a building as a means of direct action and to show to that they disagree with the place. And since then, it has always been an important aspect of squatting to be in touch with your neighborhood and to see, you know, what kind of struggle people are having there or what's going on there and how you can support each other both ways. And often this has worked quite well. But at the same time, it's of course hard to stop certain processes like a gentrification process or things like this. There has been support from neighbors as well for squatters, especially, of course, since the neighbors, they get to know the squatters, they see what kind of projects they're doing, and they see it's actually improving their neighborhood in many ways. They get more supportive and show their solidarity with the squatters, for example, by donating things or by hanging out banners when the eviction is there or protesting against the eviction together with the squatters. So this is an important aspect. And in some neighborhoods, of course, it's stronger than in other neighborhoods. In the neighborhood I live in, there's only bars and shops, so there's not much neighborhood struggle here. But in some other neighborhoods, it's a quite important aspect of the squatting.
What kind of things can we do to support the struggle from halfway across the world? How can people stay informed about what's going on and all that stuff?
Yeah, to stay informed, there is a website which looks quite old-fashioned, but that's because the squatters, when they set it up, it was really... they were one of the first to have such a website, but now it looks old-fashioned, but it's still working quite well. It also has an English explanation about the new law and what it's going to mean. It's squat.net. There you can find all kind of information about squatting, not only in Holland, but everywhere. But it's set up by a Dutch group of squatters once. That's a good place to stay informed. About support, there has been some nice support actions at embassies and in different countries, from Berlin to Spain to Czech Republic in Europe, which is, of course, fantastic to see, because this is also, we are an international movement, I would say. But I understand that recently also there's more squatting happening in the United States as well, because of the situation there. And I think people should just keep up doing that. And that's the best support, I think, for everybody to locally go on with squatting and explaining why it's a very legitimate means of actions, and by showing how ridiculous it is that you have to pay a lot of money for a basic need. And I think we would always love it if there's a certain solidarity actions like picket line at embassies, because it always, even when it's just a small flyer action, it's fantastic to see that we are everywhere, I would say.
Again, you are listening to an interview with Amsterdam squatter Sana here on Circle A Radio.
One of the reasons that the squatting has been so successful in Holland, and this is also something that I think in other places people can learn from us, is the level of organization. We have, for example, in Amsterdam, we have organized by neighborhood. We have squatting assistants where people can come. They have a certain hour every week in kind of a neutral place where people can go to and ask for help with their squatting, where they can get informed by well-informed squatters, where squatters will help them with, like, for example, breaking their door and all other things that is maybe hard for other people to do, in four different neighborhoods, like the south, the east, the west, and the center. You have these assistance hours, as we call them. And also the solidarity among squatters is very important. Before, people were silently squatting together, and you can, of course, still do that. But if you are in a situation that you are squatting, then make contact with other people that are also squatting. So when you have a problem, for example, with the owner or the police or anybody else harassing you or making problems, you can call each other and support each other. We have, for example, an alarm list with, a snowball effect, which we give to all the squatters so they can call a number. And when they're in trouble, within like 15 minutes, half an hour, there are like 40, 50, 60 or even more people in front of the door there to help them out. And I think this has been a very important reason for the big success of the squatting movement in the 70s, that we organized ourselves together on basis of solidarity. The amount of people that helped us here with, for example, things like connecting electricity or building things that we didn't quite know how to build them, it's amazing, and it's all on this basis of solidarity, and nobody needs money for anything, but you just kind of trade your services, trade your knowledge, and this is something that really, that people should realize that this way they can be so much stronger together against institutions and against the government and in creating their own lives and taking their lives in their own hands, especially in economically hard times. It's very important that people start to realize this again, that you don't need to call an official plumber if you have problems with your plumbing. Maybe there's somewhere someone willing to help you out, and then you can help out with something different. This is what I learned also from squatting, that there's so amazingly much that you can do yourself that you didn't realize before when you have help from a community like the squat community.
Thank you for listening to Circle A Radio. We'd like to thank Sana, as well as Momo, Roger, Paco, Hector, and Marat. If you'd like more information on the Squat Ban, check out the websites squat.net, indiemedia.nl, or joesgarage.nl.
If you missed any part of this show or you'd like to hear it again, or if you'd like to listen to our past work, go to our website at kbu.fm/circlearadio. You can also contact us there or at circlearadio@gmail.com. Our next show airs January 20th. Thanks for listening.